This is Sheila Hamill and Andrew Ridgwick with New Day Dawning. Welcome to Radio Tyneside, hospital and community radio on 93.6 FM, Ospedia Channel 1 and online.
I'm getting ready for a new day dawning. I'm getting ready for a brand new morning. Packing my bags for a heavenly journey. I can't wait to be there. No, I can't wait to be there.
I was looking for a good book to read on my holiday recently. And being interested in history books, I bought one by Margaret George entitled The Autobiography of Henry VIII. I was only a short way into the book when I came to a part which spoke of the Battle of Flodden Field, which was fought in 1513 between the Scots and the English. Now, I knew that the battle site wasn't far from where we were staying on holiday, so my husband and I decided to go and visit Branxton in Northumberland, where it all took place. And I saw for myself the bleak hillsides where the action took place, where so many lives were lost. And as I gathered more information about the battle from local sources, it really saddened me to a point where I began to ask myself, what exactly is it that triggers war in the first place? It seemed to begin rather like a forest fire, with one very small spark suddenly turning into a ferocious fire, which then travels at great speed, totally out of anyone's control, until all that's left is charred stumps and scorched earth. But where did that spark come from which caused so much damage? Lord, forgive the folly of it all, was what I found myself silently praying. Our first hymn says exactly the same thing. Dear Lord and Father of mankind, forgive our foolish ways. That was Dear Lord and Father of Mankind from Songs of Praise at Winchester Cathedral. So, what is it that triggers war? The Bible has an answer to my question. In the letter of James, the Apostle says, and I'm using the translation from the modern Message Bible here, which says, where do you think all these appalling wars and quarrels come from? Do you think they just happen? Think again. They come about because you want your own way and fight for it deep inside yourselves. You lust for what you don't have and are willing to kill to get it. You want what isn't yours and will risk violence to get your hands on it. James was speaking to fellow Christians there, obviously caught up in some kind of dispute at the time. But his words speak to us all today on the subject of war. It was his opinion that disputes are initially conceived from wrong thoughts deep within the human heart, which lead to wrong actions. The destructive spark begins here and takes hold. Now, I know that any nation will rise to defend itself if some great evil rises against it. But what lessons can we learn so as not to ever desire war or fan its flames? So what can we learn from this particular battle of Flodden Field? What sparked it? Well, I learned that many years before the Battle of Flodden, Henry VI of England had been crowned King of France in Paris and had owned much land there. But little by little, the French had made moves to reclaim their land. So, to the English over a period of time, it became a matter of principle and honour to win back what was lost. England's pride was at stake. Not long after Henry VIII became king, he decided to take this matter into his own hands, to right what he believed was wrong. He was young, he felt invincible, and he was surrounded and encouraged by his generals, whose raison d'etre was war. Henry rose to the challenge. He paid no heed to those of his advisers or his holy men who warned him against it. He, along with a great army, invaded France, and Pope Maximilian, an enemy of France at the time, offered his support. Henry's pride was the starting point, alongside his need for more power and land. Here also was greed, the desire to possess a land which didn't belong to his country in the first place. How many wars have begun with such thinking at the forefront of a ruler or dictator's mind? And the cost of war in itself was obscene and should have deterred Henry. It cost his country 10 times 1 year's expenditure. Just imagine what could and should be bought with such money. Let our imagining travel a little further with one of the greatest songs ever written. Here's John Lennon.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for. And no religion too. Imagine no possessions. I wonder if you can. say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us and the world will live as one.
Naturally, France sought to defend herself, and they reached out immediately for the support of a friend, an ally, which happened to be Scotland. Now, the Scottish king, James IV, was actually a wise ruler. He'd brought much stability and wealth to his country. But, being on friendly terms with France, he now faced a terrible dilemma, for they'd already agreed in a pact that if England rose up against either one of them, then the other would come to its aid. So now we see how countries with no axe to grind at all can be unwillingly sucked into a conflict, not of their own making, but simply because of some alliance. James IV first tried to persuade Henry not to invade France. He sent a messenger to Henry in France, but his plea fell on deaf ears. In order to deter him from his campaign, James crossed the border with an army and invaded the northernmost part of England. He had the largest and best-equipped army ever to cross into England. Some of his men raided strongholds and castles there and returned to Scotland with their booty, deserting James. So his army wasn't at full strength when he eventually came to the battlefield at Flodden. He only had 30,000 of the initial 40,000 men. And since he only marched a very short distance into England, some historians suggest he had no intention of invading England. He only hoped for a brief encounter, followed by an immediate withdrawal to Scotland. Then he could claim to have honoured his promise to France. So another lesson for today. If you play with fire, you're going to get burnt. Keep away from conflict. Don't get involved in the first place. On a more personal note, we should all nip arguments in the bud, shouldn't we, before they take hold. That's what this next song is all about. It's a song called The Quarrel from my album Giving It All To You, and I'm accompanied here by Pete Scott from Whitley Bay.
Don't know if I can look into your eyes, can't even reach to hold your hand. There's so much to gain if we talk this thing through, only I am so afraid of losing you. So much to say. There's so much to lose if we don't talk this time. Only I am so afraid of losing you.
As King Henry was fighting in France, the English army of about 26,000 men was under the command of a man called Thomas Howard, the Earl of Surrey, who marched against the Scots, directed and encouraged by Henry's wife, Catherine of Aragon, in his absence. The Earl had everything to gain by wiping out the Scots, as he was ambitious to regain family title and lands which had been lost in the War of the Roses. He was a well-seasoned fighter and ruthless. His army had superior weapons, lighter cannon, arrows and billhooks. The prior at Durham gave the sacred banner of St Cuthbert to him for his army to carry into battle. Most likely both sides, England and Scotland, believed they had God on their side. It's often the case. But I would argue God's not on either side in war. He's there suffering and ministering to the wounded and the dying in the midst of the battle, right alongside those who need him most. Let's listen to what Bob Dylan has to say about that. This song's God on Our Side.
Oh, my name, it ain't nothing. My age, it means less. The country I come from is called the Midwest. I was taught and brought up there, the laws to abide. and that the land that I live in has God on its side. Ah, the history books tell it, they tell it so well. The cavalry's charge, the Indians fell. The cavalry's charge, the Indians died. Ah, the country was young with God on its side. The Spanish-American wars had its day, and the Civil War too was soon laid away, and the names of the heroes I was made to memorize, with guns in their hands and God on their side.
No quarter was asked for, and no quarter was given. It was to be a fight to the death. Only by a mighty victory could the Earl become a Duke again. So here was full-blown ambition, and once more pride and greed. Here also was a thirst for blood, as he took his army from the south and manoeuvred them into a northerly position, blocking off the possibility of a Scottish retreat. The two armies faced up to each other at Branxton, on two opposite hills. Below the hills lay a valley or dip in the land, which was actually boggy ground then, not like now, well drained. Only a small stream runs there now. As you walk around the scene of the battle today, you can just picture those two armies waiting for that terrifying moment of engagement. Troops to the left of James and his clan chiefs charged too soon, following the initial exchanges of cannon. At first there was a small victory for them on the English right flank, and so down the Scots came straight into the mud below. As I understand it, the Scots were knee-deep in mud, their long pikes no longer any use. Their own soldiers followed the front runners down the hill and came crashing into the ones in front. Then the Scots were rained on with arrows from their right. The English saw the opportunity in their distress and quickly descended with their sharp billhooks, cutting the Scottish pikes to pieces, and mass slaughter followed. An entire generation of men was wiped out. Rough estimates put Scottish losses up to as many as 14,000 men killed that day in just 2 hours. The English lost a mere 1,500. James, the Scottish king, had nobly led from the front with his chieftains, and with their deaths, there was no one to sound the retreat or give directions. Unlike the English Earl and his chiefs, who directed from behind their lines and were in full command of the killing field. What is it about war that those who fight can become so cruel, so savage and so unmerciful? No brother looking out for brother here. Unlike our following song by Neil Diamond, "He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother."
The road is long, with many winding turns, that leads us to who knows where, who knows where. But I'm strong, strong enough to carry him. He ain't heavy, he's my brother. So on we go. His welfare is my concern. No burden is he to bear. get there. For I know he would not encumber me. He ain't heavy.
The Earl of Surrey and his men were jubilant, and when Henry, who was still in France, heard about their success, he pronounced it a glorious victory. The Earl was soon reinstated as the Duke of Norfolk. He got what he wanted, as did Henry, but at what cost? War ultimately makes victims of everyone. Both sides suffer horrendous injuries and loss. Young, sensitive minds that have witnessed the horror of it all become traumatized, and future enemies are conceived as thoughts turn to revenge. We cannot gain respect by oppressing others or being aggressive. As I walked around that battle site, I found myself grieving for the dead whose lives were cut short so brutally and in such an undignified way, particularly the Scots, who were underdogs that day. Now, had the English led the charge, it would have been an entirely different story. More men were killed that day in those 2 hours than in any single day in World War I, so they say. And this was the last medieval-style battle fought on English soil. A poem was written hundreds of years later in honour of the dead, entitled Flowers of the Forest, which said, "That day made many a fatherless child, and many a widow poor, and many a Scottish gay lady sate, weeping in her bower." This poem reminds me very much of the Scottish anthem, The Flower of Scotland, often sung in sports stadiums and sung here by the Corries. It reflects on a much earlier battle than the one at Flodden, but nevertheless the message is the same. Here we have precious lives full of the bloom of youth and vitality, tragically cut down and lost in battle, never to return home.
Oh, Flower of Scotland, when will we see your like again, that fought and died for your wee bit hill and glen and stood against him?
Let us pray today with the prophet Micah for that day when swords will be beaten into ploughshares and spears will be turned into pruning hooks. For that day when nation will not take up sword against nation, nor train for war any more. Today is Remembrance Sunday, a day when we commemorate the contribution of our own British and Commonwealth military and civilian servicemen and women in all conflicts since the start of the First World War. By no means do we glorify war in these services which will be held today, but it is incumbent upon us to remember the ultimate sacrifices that many men and women have made to ensure the liberty and the freedoms that today we take for granted. And so let us remember this day the fallen of our time, the injured, those still in pain, those who cannot dispel the horror of war, and those involved in war at present. At the going down of the sun, and in the morning, we remember them all. Here is a poem written by one of our listeners, Carol Dixon. All heaven weeps to see the earth abused and maimed by war and strife. When people hate, when people fight and rob each other of their life. Kyrie eleison, Lord have mercy, God forgive us, for we know not what we do. When greed prevails and crushed by power, the poor are trampled on for gain. The heart of God is torn in two, and Christ is crucified again. Kyrie eleison, Lord have mercy, God forgive us, for we know not what we do. What we so much need in our world today is what the Apostle James calls the wisdom that comes from heaven, which is first of all pure, peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. He claimed that peacemakers who sow in peace raise a harvest of righteousness. Our final song today is sung by Lorena McKennett, who has these words to say: when the dark night seems endless, please remember me. I'm afraid that's all we have time for today. This is Sheila Hamill and Andrew Ridgewick saying bye for now.
When the dark wood fell before me and all the paths were overgrown, when the breeze of pride say there is no other way, I tilled the sorrows of stone. I did not believe because I could not see, though you came to me in the night. When the dawn seemed forever lost, you showed me your love in the light of the stars. Cast your eyes on the ocean, cast your soul to the sea. Night seems endless, please remember me. When the mountain rose before me by the deep well of desire, from the fountain of forgiveness beyond the ice and the sea, when the dark night seems endless, please remember.